Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1942, with the release date of October 31st, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Several ham radio payloads are lost in a launch mishap of an Orbital Sciences resupply mission to the International Space Station. Indonesia hams may play a part in that nation's Ebola prevention plan. Islands on the Air program to freeze all actions involving the Crimea situation. A Flea Power Pico balloon launched down under is heard in the United States. And Sunspot AR-2192 says a temporary goodbye by sending two more X-class flares our way. Find out details on the Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1942 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Two experimental satellites designed to operate in the 70-centimeter amateur satellite band have been lost. This after an Orbital Sciences Antares 130 launch vehicle on a resupply mission to the International Space Station was destroyed only a few seconds after it had cleared the launch tower. The October 28th launch from NASA's Wallops Island, Virginia facility at first appeared to be going smoothly, but at about 8 seconds after liftoff, the Antares booster exploded in a hail of flames and fell back towards its launch pad. While there were no full or half-duplex ham radio communication satellites on board, two of the microsats being carried on the International Space Station for later deployment were designed to be operating as data and beacon downlinks in the 70-centimeter amateur satellite band. One was the GOMX-2, which was a developmental concept microsat for aircraft location. It was to transmit data on 437.250 MHz. The other was to be the Radiometer Atmospheric CubeSat experiment, known by the acronym RACE. It was co-developed by a student team at the Texas Spacecraft Laboratory at the University of Texas in Austin in cooperation with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. This was to be a technology microsat designed to transmit GMSK coding at 38.4 kilobits per second and CW telemetry on a downlink frequency of 437.525 MHz. The primary cargo on the Antares was food and other supplies to restock the ISS day-to-day crew, which they need along with some restricted payload not identified by NASA or the launch provider. Yet another part of the cargo was material for scientific projects that included a Houston Schools experiment on pea growth, a study on blood flow in space. New reports say that NASA officials have already apologized to those students who lost their experiments. In all, nearly 1,600 pounds of science and research materials were lost in the launch mishap. Ham radio operators in Indonesia could become part of a response team if the Ebola virus were to hit that nation. This as researchers from a study program of the University of Gajah Mada School of Engineering introduced guidelines for anticipating and preventing the spread of the deadly disease in that nation. According to a professor of physics engineering at the college, Indonesia lacks both the knowledge and the adequate health equipment needed to detect Ebola early. Using a simulation created for such an event, and in cooperation with the Yogyakarta branch of the Indonesian Amateur Radio Organization and the Indonesian Red Cross, the three will work together to formulate a standard operating procedure for tackling Ebola infections. This will be submitted to the governor for his consideration. According to the Jakarta Post, it's hoped that the proposal could provide basic guidelines for an Ebola mitigation procedure on a national level. The complete story can be found at tinyurl.com/hams-vs-ebola-part-1. The big cleanup continues in the wake of powerful cyclone Hudhud, which affected areas along India's Bay of Bengal coastline, and ham radio continues as part of the effort. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, has the latest.
Cyclone Hudhud made landfall on October 12th. The storm-packed wind gusts estimated at up to 135 miles per hour, leaving a path of destruction in its wake. Some media accounts putting the death toll as high as 46. Amid the disaster scene, ham radio operators worked to maintain the communications for the public, the government, and relief authorities. The Amateur Radio Society of India's National Coordinator for Disaster Communications is Jehu Bahidi, VU2JAU. He says the area had trees uprooted, railway lines blocked, and both telephone lines and mobile phone towers damaged in the area where the storm made landfall. In his latest report, VU2JAU said there were many radio amateurs active on an emergency response net on 7.145 MHz that was operational 24 hours a day. Operators included VU3UFX, VU3PLP and VU2AOR. Assigned to the Sambalpur area were VU2DPI, VU2SIC and VU2PGU. Now, some 3 weeks later, a group of radio amateurs continue to assist both relief authorities and the general public in regions where normal lines of communications have yet to be restored. VU2JAU says that while the worst is over for the time being, that many lessons on how to prepare for the next big storm have been learned. As the National Coordinator for Disaster Communications in India, he plans to visit the state of Odisha to help make ham radio as fail-safe as is possible during an emergency. This includes the use of a repeater for VHF handheld communications. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meacham, ZL2BHF, reporting from Nelson, New Zealand.
The Bay of Bengal is well known for some of the world's strongest killer cyclones. Meanwhile, amateur radio operators from West Bengal and Hyderabad are on alert to establish radio communications in case their help is needed in the wake of yet another storm. Cyclone Niloufar predicted to hit India about this time this newscast goes to air. The island's on-the-air management has decided that due to the unresolved political situation in Crimea, it has no course open to it except to freeze certain actions connected with Crimea for an initial period of 1 year. This in the routine management of the island's on-the-air program. Now, this means that it will not accept or issue credit for EU-180 operations taking place after March 17, 2014, that use non-Ukrainian call signs. Nor will it accede to any requests from program participants for updates of their records, changes of call sign, and or checkpoint that involve a change of DXCC entity. The committee says that it will review the situation after 1 year in light of developments. The original announcement made on October the 21st can be read at rsgbiota.org. In DX Upfront, word that KM0O will be operational as 3W3O from Vietnam between November 25th and December the 24th. His main activity will be on the CQ Worldwide DXCW contest, November 29th and 30th, but expect him to be on 160 and 80 meters before and after the contest. QSL to KM0O direct via the Bureau or electronically using Logbook of the World. Also, IK1PMR and PA3LEO will be on the air signing portable EA-8 from Tenerife Island between December 9th of this year and January 8th of 2015. Activity will be on 160 through 6 meters using CW, sideband, and RIDI. QSL via HB9FKK or each operator's home call sign director via the Bureau. Electronic QSLs go via Logbook of the World or direct email. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KB5 ELV repeater serving Erie, Pennsylvania. Space weather reports that giant sunspot AR2192, that's the one we reported on last week, erupted again at 2140 UTC on October the 24th, producing a powerful X3 class solar flare. A pulse of extreme ultraviolet radiation from the flare ionized the upper layers of the Earth's atmosphere, causing a brief but strong blackout of high-frequency radio communications over the day side of the Earth. This was followed by an X1-class flare on Saturday, October 25th at 1709 UTC that had a similar effect. Now, coronagraphic data from NASA's Solar and Heliospheric Observatory suggests that the explosions did not hurl a significant coronal mass ejection towards our home planet. Also of interest is that so far, none of the X flares from this active region has so far produced a major CME. Now, sunspot AR2192 is now approaching the sun's western limb, and by the time many of you hear this, it'll be gone for its two-week transit on our home star's far side. However, the odds of an Earth-directed radiation storm will remain high for a while. This is because the western limb of the sun is well connected to Earth and solar magnetic fields springing out of that region spiral back towards our planet. If a sunspot passing through the area explodes, those magnetic fields can funnel energetic particles in our direction. The International Amateur Radio Union Administrative Council has called upon all International Telecommunications Union signatory nations to take steps to ensure that the operation of electrical apparatus or installations of any kind does not cause harmful interference to amateur radio operations. The Council said new technologies such as wireless power transfer are likely to be deployed in the near future, and as such, it expressed a deep concern that present standards, regulations, and enforcement resources are inadequate to protect radio services, including amateur radio, from harmful interference. AT&T has confirmed that it accidentally relayed an incorrect emergency alert message from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to its U-verse customers in parts of Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, Michigan, and Mississippi. The alert messages began popping up on screens around 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on October 24th. Red banners appeared on television screens of viewers in the affected areas, alerting them to stand by for an important message. Soon after the incident, FEMA spokesperson Raphael Lamatier stated that there had been an inappropriate playing of the national emergency alert notification tones on a syndicated radio broadcast. He went on to state that there is not a national emergency, but that the broadcast triggering alert notification in states where it had been played. Lamatier said his agency was working with the FCC to quantify the scale of the event. The Federal Communications Commission has once again postponed an auction that would allow television broadcasters to sell a portion of their spectrum to wireless carriers, this to the ongoing legal issues surrounding the auction. Earlier this summer, the National Association of Broadcasters petitioned the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit Court to review some aspects of the auction. They stated that they're concerned about the potential impact that such an action could have on TV stations. Gary Epstein is the chair of the FCC's Incentive Auction Task Force. In a recent blog post, Epstein stated that the FCC is confident that they will prevail in court. Now that said, and given the reality of that schedule, the complexity of implementation and many other aspects of the auction, the agency now anticipates accepting applications in the fall of 2015 with an auction start to take place in early 2016. This is the second time the auction has been pushed back. It was originally expected to get underway this year before being delayed until mid-2015. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/spectrum-auction-delay. Members of the American Legion Amateur Radio Club will operate station W9L on November 11th, which is Veterans Day 2014. W9L will be on the air from 1400 to 2100 UTC from the club's national headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. The high-frequency operation will take place on 14.275 MHz. There will also be local participation on the 146.46 simplex, the Hamilton County 145.17 MHz repeater, and an interconnection via IRLP node 4816. Hams who make contact with W9L, or shortwave listeners who hear the station, are eligible to receive a full-color commemorative certificate. More about this operation, including QSL routing, is at www.legion.org/ham radio. Special event station KC9HYY stroke WSL-3 will be operational in remembrance of the 98th anniversary of the sinking of the HMHS Britannic. The Britannic was the third and largest Olympic-class ocean liners of the White Star Line. She was launched just before the start of World War I and soon converted to use as a hospital ship. On the morning of November 21, 1916, the Britannic was shaken by an explosion from an underwater mine in the Key Channel and sank 55 minutes later. There were 1,066 people on board, of which 1,036 survived. Now, in remembrance of this event, call sign KC9HYY/WSL3 will be taking to the ham radio bands from November 21st through the 24th, operating 40 through 10 meters using single sideband and some of the digital modes. More information, including QSL routing, is in a QRZ forum under the call sign listing for KC9HYY. Also, keep an ear open for a special event station, IY1IEY, to be on the air between November 1st and December 31st to commemorate the experiments conducted by Guglielmo Marconi from his yacht, Elettra, between 1919 and 1936. Operations will all be on the high-frequency bands, including 30, 17, and 12 meters. QSL via IK1QBT Direct. It's not even 2015 yet, but registrations for next August's International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend already stand at 75, with nearly half being from Australia. Others already on the list represent Argentina, Canada, England, Finland, Germany, Malaysia, Netherlands, Northern Ireland, Scotland, South Africa, and the United States. Now, it's never too early to register a lighthouse or lightship to take part in this very popular yearly event. Simply take your web browser to www.illw.net and follow the simple instructions on the page. And lest we forget, the dates of the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend is August the 15th and the 16th of 2015. Indonesia's new national leaders are both amateur radio licensees. The ARRL reports that President Joko Widodo, YD2JKW, holds a general class license, and Vice President Yusuf Kalla, KC8HYK, is an advanced class licensee. Elected in July, Jokowi and Kalla were inaugurated on October the 20th in Jakarta, Indonesia. Now, Indonesia is the world's third largest democracy, with a population of approximately 250 million. The Radio Society of Great Britain has announced the appointment of Philip Willis, M0PHI, as the new chairman of its Training and Education Committee. Willis succeeds Steve Hartley, G0FUW. International Amateur Radio Union Electromagnetic Compatibility Coordinator Thilo Kutz, who holds the call signs DL9KCE and AD7IY, has been presented with the IEC, or International Electromechanical Commission, 1906 award. This award recognizes his exceptional and recent achievement related to the activities of the IEC, and which contributes in a significant way to advancing the work of the commission. Kutz received the honor for his contributions in developing the model for radiated emission limits in the frequency range below 30 megahertz. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We're the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org, and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. A lightweight micropower ham radio floater balloon launched in Australia has been heard in the United States, as we hear from WIA newsman Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
A party-type Pico balloon carrying a payload was launched from Melbourne on Saturday, October 18, and tracked to Tamworth, New South Wales, between Sydney and Brisbane. It was launched by Andy, VK3YT, who says that during the flight, solar-powered Pico balloon PS23 was heard on WSPR as far away as the United States by Whiskey 8 Alpha Charlie in Ohio. The tracking of the 25-milliwatt balloon involves stations in VK1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 and ZL1 using Olivia and JT65 on 30 and 20 metres. Andy VK3YT says PS23 landed near Tamworth to be recovered by a team of scouts from the local Jota, led by Ashley VK2XSO and Ron VK2HRD. It was launched again on Sunday, but this time with payload number 2 using JT9. That flight landed in the Tasman on Sunday night. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News in Australia.
According to VK4BB, both balloons were tracked all the way to the ground level by VK6XT near the city of Perth in Western Australia and ZL1RS in New Zealand, both of whom are many thousands of kilometers away from where the launch and the flights took place. United Kingdom telecommunications regulator Ofcom has confirmed that the call sign GB1SS will be made available for issue to UK astronauts who wish to operate from the International Space Station. The first British astronaut slated to go on the expedition to the ISS is Tim Peake, who joined the Corps in 2009 and hopes to go to the ISS in November 2015. Peake holds the United States call sign KG5BVI and has been recently in training to use the Ericsson 2-meter handheld radio, which is installed in the Columbus module of the orbiting outpost. Also hoping to visit the International Space Station, but as a space tourist, is entertainer Sarah Brightman. As previously reported, she'll begin her official training for the 10-day visit early next year, but it's unknown if she'll take to the ham radio airwaves during her time on orbit. The very first United Kingdom astronaut ham was Helen Sharman, GB1MIR, who spent time aboard the Russian MIR space station. And while there, Sharman made contact with radio amateurs around the world, including many with students and school classes. A small group of individuals will spend the next 8 months living in an isolated dome-shaped building on a Hawaiian volcano. The NASA-financed study is called the Hawaii Space Exploration Analog and Simulation, or High Seas Mission 3. It's been designated to examine how well a small, isolated group of people can get along and work together. The study's a precursor for NASA's future manned missions to Mars to take place in the 2030s. It will be a long journey, as it'll take astronauts around 6 months to reach Mars. And then they'll spend at least 500 days on the red planet, followed by another 6 months to get back to Earth. The full story is at tinyurl.com/Hawaii-space-dome. Details of the two past simulated Mars missions is at tinyurl.com/high-seas-Hawaii. On the air, the United Kingdom's Royal Air Force Amateur Radio Society is sending an expedition to the Falkland Islands to coincide with the 100th anniversary of the WW1 Battle of the Falklands on December the 8th. VP8RAF-100 and VP8FIR-100 will operate from the Joint Services Welfare Facility Amateur Radio Station from December the 5th through the 9th. Also, all VP8 prefix stations will be able to use Stroke 100 between the 1st of November and the 15th of December 2014. And listen out for the special call sign AT1JCB from India between November 21st through December the 9th. This is in celebration of scientist Akara Jagdish Chandra Bose and of his many scientific achievements. This will be a digital-only operation by VU2EXP using PSK31, PSK63, PSK125, JT65, and other digital modes on 40 through 10 meters. QSL via VU2EXP direct or electronically using Logbook of the World. In DEC, PG5M has announced that he'll be operational as CE0Y/PG5M from Easter Island between November 23rd to the 28th. This will be a holiday-style operation with further details forthcoming. QSL via his home call sign direct or via the Bureau. Members of the F6KOP team and Lion DX gang are activating Tromelin Island as FT4TA through November the 10th. They plan to have four stations on the air for 10 days on 160 through 10 meters using sideband CW and RIDI, QSL via F1NGP. Members of the 9M2SE Malaysian Special Expedition Team will be active from Pangkor Island between 0800 UTC on November the 7th and 0100 on November the 9th. Activity will be 40 through 10 meters using sideband and CW. No QSL information was provided in this announcement. UA3IPL will be active as Stroke JW from Spitsbergen Island for 4 months starting October the 30th. His operation will be on the high frequency bands using slow speed Morse, single sideband, RIDI, PSK31, and JT65. QSL via RW6HS direct. Lastly, G8OFQ will be active Stroke HC8 from the Galapagos Islands from July 1st to September 30th of 2015. Operations will be on 160 through 6 meters, but no times or modes have been mentioned. QSL via HA3JB. And finally this week, when Cyclone Hudhud swept through India's city of Visakhapatnam, it took out all normal means of communications. As already reported, ham radio operators were called to create communications networks to fill the void. One of those responding was a 15-year-old Tim K. Jose, VU3TMO. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, has his story.
Taking time off from school, Tom K. Jose, VU3TMO, was stationed in the emergency response control room set up at Visakhapatnam Police Commission. There he spent hours collecting messages from other team members spread over the cyclone-affected areas that he passed on to the administrators in charge of relief measures. VU3TMO, who is a first-year student at Little Flower Junior College, received his amateur radio license at the age of 13. Together with the first response team, he operated under adverse conditions, often skipping meals and spending long hours on the radio waiting for messages. Some days, VU3TMO and the others in the team handled upward of 500 health, welfare, and direct relief messages directly related to the cyclone. Tom K. Jose, VU3TMO, comes from a ham radio family. According to his page on QRZ.com, his parents are VU2JOS and VU3LMS, and his brother is VU3TNI, and his grandfather is VU2ACN. He is a member of India's National Institute of Amateur Radio and the Dayton Amateur Radio Association, and one of the youngest active radio amateurs in his nation. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB reporting.
The complete story of the assistance provided by VU3TMO and other volunteers provided in the wake of Cyclone Hudhud is in cyberspace at tinyurl.com/young-cyclone-communicator. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Hindu Online, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014. All rights are reserved.